This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Pauli Murray was a civil rights activist, a lawyer, a writer, a professor, and an Episcopal priest. And now she is a saint. Earlier this month, the Episcopal Church General Convention voted to add Pauli Murray to their book of Holy Men, Holy Women, and memorialize her. Pauli Murray was born in 1910, raised by her aunt in Durham. She wanted to go to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, but was denied entry because of her race. Tried to get into Columbia University, but was rejected because she was a woman. Harvard denied her entry for the same reason. But she did get a college education and a law degree, and she became the first black female Episcopal priest in 1977. I'm joined today by Barbara Lau, director of the Pauli Murray Project, and Meg McCann, who is a parishioner at St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Durham. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Great to have you. Barbara, remind us again. Tell us about Pauli Murray.
Well, you know, she grew up in the house of her grandparents from the very prestigious Fitzgerald family here in Durham. And she was one of six children, came to Durham because her mother passed away when her little brother was born. And, you know, she just was formed in a way that we can be so proud of here in Durham as a fighter, as someone who decided that she could be different and still be just great. And obviously went on to amazing heights, you know, six post-secondary degrees, right? English literature, 3 degrees in law, 2 in divinity, was an attorney, was an amazing researcher, wrote a book about all of the laws related to race and color in the United States that was a hugely valuable resource to many of the civil rights efforts, one of the founders of the National Organization for Women, a tenured professor at Brandeis University, and as you mentioned, the first Episcopal priest. She also, or first black woman as an Episcopal priest, she also wrote a great book about Durham that, of course, we always try to plug. It's called Proud Shoes, The Story of an American Family, that really helps a lot of us understand that time and understand what it was like in Durham and how someone growing up in the midst of that could really become such an important national figure as she has. We're just thrilled now that we're going to share it. We're going to share it with so many people.
How was that possible? Born in 1910, raised in a city like Durham, all of those degrees, that great accomplished, all of those great scholarly accomplishments, not to mention her activism. And she was denied entry to almost every school she wanted to go. None of them wanted to have her.
Yeah, I think that she had a tremendous sense of resilience. But one of the things that is her great talent is she was incredibly smart. She was a great writer. She was just really brilliant. And I think that African Americans growing up at that time, after the Civil War, trying to carve out these new ideas about being citizens, about participating, really had to develop some pretty thick skin, a lot going against them. And when you think about how much success our business community in Durham had, our civil rights community here, our writers, you know, it really took a tremendous amount of resilience, but it took that community behind them. It took people believing in them and helping them see that, you know, it doesn't matter who says no, you just keep going because in the end, you are going to succeed.
And you're going to hear something else because I'm going to play a clip here. This is an interview that is now part of the Southern Oral History Collection at UNC Library. An interview with Pauli Murray. She became an Episcopal priest. She's going to explain why, but when you listen to her voice, you're going to hear something else that may answer part of the question I asked a minute ago.
My decision to become a candidate for holy orders is much more closely related to my feeling of standing in the tradition of Martin Luther King, Jr., and my strong conviction that basically all of these problems of human rights in which I had been involved for most of my adult life, that basically these were moral and spiritual problems.
So intelligence, thick skin, and a real patient determination, which comes through in her voice. And obviously the insight that these things were all connected. And her essay, Jane Crow, also made a connection that hadn't been made in the civil rights movement till then.
You know, one of the things that's so unique about her is this very broad notion of inclusion. She was not going to leave anybody behind. Now, part of that obviously was born of her own identity. She had all of these different overlapping identities, obviously oppressed because of her color, because of her race, perhaps because of her sexual identity and sexual preference. But she did not just say, well, let me get ahead. her notion, and she was stalwart about this. I mean, we have heard stories about, you know, how persuasive she could be about this idea that we all needed to move together and we did not need to marginalize anyone in the process. She wanted to, as they say, be herself at all times. And that meant bringing all those other people with her, which I think is an incredibly relevant idea today. We are just catching up to this idea of that kind of inclusion and that kind of sort of open lovingness that I think that she brought to, obviously, to her work as a priest, but also to much of her other work.
So Meg McCann, you were part of the effort or among those who helped see to it that Pauli Murray was made a saint. She's an Episcopal priest. Why was that important to you? Tell us about the effort to make Pauli Murray a saint in the Episcopal Church.
Well, this idea grew out of the Episcopal Diocese of North Carolina. It was proposed at our diocesan convention 3 years ago and forwarded on to the general convention, which happens every 3 years, and it's the quote-unquote national church. Our church actually goes beyond the U.S., which is one of the things that makes this so exciting, is that now people throughout the world, not just the U.S., will know about her and see her as an example. And that's what we mean by saints in the Episcopal Church, is someone who will be a beacon and show us how to live as Jesus would have us live.
And tell us a little bit more about that. What does it mean to be a saint in the Episcopal Church?
Well, the name of the book, as you said, is Holy Women, Holy Men, and that's what we mean, that these are people who are folks who we can follow. It's not the same as ascribing particular spiritual powers to these people like in some other traditions.
Yeah, in the Catholic tradition, for instance, a saint really has to have some spiritual and miraculous qualities and events that are ascribed to them, but that's not the case in the Episcopal Church.
That's right. There's a great hymn called I Sing a Song for the Saints of God, and it ends with, "For the saints of God are just folk like me, and I mean to be one too."
What was the process like in terms of because I know it was a little bit faster. Ordinarily, you have to wait a little while in the Episcopal Church to become a saint.
Well, it varies, and they're trying to make it a little more routine. The resolution from our diocesan convention went to general convention 3 years ago, and it could potentially have been acted on then, but it wasn't for various reasons. She was on the list of people who were considered at that point, but one of the guidelines was that people have to have been dead for 50 years. And we argued that she would always be the first African-American woman who had been ordained in the Episcopal Church, regardless of whether we waited 50 years. And so in the intervening 3 years, the commission that deals with these agreed with us and put it forward again for this general convention.
What does it mean to the Episcopal Church? Does it change things? What does it matter to the Episcopal Church that Pauli Murray is now in that book?
I think it does. There's a book that has a page for each person who's on the calendar, and that book includes the biography as well as prayers and readings associated with her. And so people who follow that book we'll read about her every year and learn about her and be inspired by her. So,
Barbara Lau, was the Pauli Murray Project involved in this process?
Well, we were a behind-the-scenes support player here. Meg is being too modest because she really put together a great deal of background information and materials to help these committees understand how important it was to us locally, just how much significance she had as well as being a priest in a lot of other areas of her life. And, you know, I think that part of this effort is just trying to spread the word, right? So more people know about her, the more people ask me, well, why don't I know about her? The more I say, well, now you do, so your job is to tell other people. And I think that chain of events certainly creates momentum, and I think that momentum may have encourage more people. Plus, of course, we were very smart about the convention. We created these wonderful buttons that Meg had suggested with Pauli's picture on them that said, "Ask me about Pauli Murray," so that all these folks that were learning about her could then, continue to spread the word about why. And I just want to say that I think it really is important for a major religious body like the Episcopal Church to recognize someone like Pauli Murray, who is not the mainstream. who could very easily be marginalized, whose life could easily be, say, well, she wasn't the president of an organization, or she didn't write the definitive work here or there. But to really look at a life's work of living in a way that really is a great model for all of us. So, of course, we're just really excited that it's, you know, that big a group is joining with us in this effort.
And tell us more about the Pauli Murray Project and kind of what's in store over the next few months and
years. We're absolutely, you know, we're really excited. We have been laying the groundwork for a number of efforts. We were on the show with you before when we produced our play, To Buy the Sun, which we're hoping to take on a national tour to churches and colleges and places all over the country. We also purchased Pauli Murray's childhood home here in Durham, and it needs a huge amount of TLC. The poor foundation is beginning to crumble. It's been there since the 1890s, and we really wanted to galvanize the community around building that, not just as a place where people can come learn about Pauli Murray, because we do want it to be a historic destination. We want Durham to become known as the home of Pauli Murray, but as an important asset to the community right around it in Durham's West End. So we're going to be embarking on some both, you know, human capital and financial capital campaigns to try to make that happen. And we hope to do that in the next, hopefully, 3 to 5 years.
Great. Barbara, Meg, great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Barbara Loud, director of the Pauli Murray Project. Meg McGann is a parishioner at St. Philip's Episcopal Church. Just ahead, we'll hear about a unique project that shows the relationship between our community and our music here in the Triangle. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.